Hi, I'm Spencer.
And I'm Blake.
And you're about to get jumped.
Welcome to episode 204 of Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, a weekly podcast where we watch the anime so you don't have to.
But you should still totally watch the anime.
This week on Get Jumped, we're watching Cyberpunk Edgerunners and Yu Yu Hakusho episodes 98 through 100, where in one, you make an all-new you with military-grade technology, and in the other, you do it by transporting yourself to a demonic realm.
Again, I will point out that the demonic realm is still accepting applicants to come and hang out. You can go for a low, low fee of dying and selling your soul to a demon overlord. There are three: Rappy Face, Guy in a Corner, Old Guy Who Won't Eat. Come join us and do me. I couldn't finish it. Anyways, let's jump in.
I was not expecting that list of three.
Hey, everybody. So we have before we begin this week, a quick pre-show thing just so you can get excited. We have officially mailed out correctly the first winner's stuff from our first giveaway. Ever since we switched to Jinji Ito books. They are both fantastic, and I sent them along. This one is coming up a little bit later in this month just because I've been very, very busy, and also our schedule got fucked. So I will be posting about this the same time that we are dropping this episode. So if you want to look out for it, you can. But I believe that I have a sweet, sweet Funko Pop to give away to somebody. And I will post a picture of what it looks like as soon as we drop this episode. So if you're excited about that, the only way that you can enter is by going and liking and or sharing, and really both. Please do both. The post about it so that we can get more people to listen to the show. And also, you might win a sweet Funko Pop.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big Funko Pop person. I like them, but I don't want like a ton of them around my house. So I've got a handful of Funko Pops that I like. They're really cute. And then some people are like super into them, and it's like this is like the thing that clicks with their collectorness, and they'll you know, like get a bunch of them, or they'll have like a whole bookshelf of them, or they'll get like the containers to keep them. It's like a good collector's item if you're like a collecty person. And there's so many. They make so many. Like they've started doing a lot of Pokemon ones. And it was like, one, why didn't they start doing this earlier? They had a few like Pikachu ones, maybe like a couple of Eevee ones, but now they're just like making, like they have a Caterpie one for some reason, and like it's really cute.
And you're like, I want to go to there.
Yeah, they've got like a Lapras. They're doing some really surprising choices, and I suspect that because of the nature of Pokemon, they will do a bunch of them and just sort of like release them in small batches. So I like that. That's smart, but they basically do that with every IP, and many of the IPs you're like, what? There's a pop of this? Or like an entire series of like six different pops. And then I went to the store on my vacation recently that was like, I was trying to find like a comics and collectibles store, like basically a board games, card shop, comic book store. And instead, what we walked into was a store that had like a pretty robust Pokemon trading card game section, no other card games, and then just like walls and walls and walls of pops, including a section at the back that was like full of like convention exclusive pops that were being sold for like $60 or more a piece. It was crazy.
I looked up the one that we're giving away. The one we're giving away is like it's like a $45 Funko Pop.
Nice. So, that's like three or four times what you would pay for the regular Funko Pop at a store.
Yeah.
Your average run-of-the-mill Funko. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. So get excited about that and check out our Twitter feed to see exactly what you could be entering in for.
Spencer, I have news.
I know that you do. And it's
weird. It's weird news.
It's real weird.
I don't want to say it's bad news because that's putting the cart before the horse, but it's not my favorite news. So I actually got this off of Polygon last night. So as we're recording this, this news is about a day old. So Crunchyroll's Mob Psycho 100 Season 3 recasting strikes a nerve with the anime world. That's the headline. Basically, what happened is the guy, the voice actor named Kyle McCarley, is the voice actor for the character Shigeo Kageyama, who is also known as Mob. He is our main character. He's been that voice actor for the first two seasons, and it sounds like he's not coming back for season three. So he's going to be recast. That's going to be probably that's why I say this is this feels like bad news. That said, I think saying that it's just bad news is maybe like unfair to whichever voice actor has to replace him, because they're obviously going to be excited and they're going to be doing their best. And it's not
also fair. It's not 100% confirmed. I also read about this. The reason why it is not 100% confirmed is that because this may be a ploy to break Crunchyroll's line, kind of where they're standing right now in contract negotiations. So just be aware that this might be a tactic to try to, you know, change what it is.
Yeah, and the article from Polygon makes it clear that this is based off of mostly a negotiating tactic. So specifically, yeah, it says the voice actor Kyle, Kyle McCarley, is asking for a union contract. He wants to work under a union contract. I believe they specifically mentioned SAG-AFTRA in here, which I wasn't sure if that covered anime voice actors or not. So I'm going to assume that it does. In here. So SAG-AFTRA is just basically the big Screen Actors Guild. That's what SAG stands for. And so that's sort of the umbrella union that takes care of all the, you know, performers that you watch on television and movies. So he would like to work under a SAG-AFTRA contract. He also specifically, so a quote from him in this is, and I want to put this little note in here to be very, very clear. It's not about money. They were prepared to pay me at least what I would be getting on a union scale contract, possibly more. They just don't want to put it on a union contract. And so this is this voice actor making basically a political statement with his career, that he wants to work as a union actor, and not even if he could be, he's basically wants to work as a union actor for reasons that don't simply have to do with the pay that's guaranteed to union actors. He's clarified that again, they would pay him as much or more as he would be getting on a union contract, but he wants it to be a union contract for other reasons. They don't really reasons.
I have some reasons that I wanted to point out to you that are I read this news as well. It was written about very, very, very long-windedly on Reddit through the different voice actor Reddits. A lot of people talking about this going on, and a lot of people very interested as why this would be going on. And one of the big things that's being pushed back on is that a lot of people believe that he is trying to advertise for the union so that Crunchyroll will be more forced to go into union negotiation with SAG-AFTRA more than they have before. Because a lot of people that are working for these simuldubs and stuff like that, they are not exclusively done underneath a union contract. And a lot of times they are not. And because of that, they are paid at different scales depending on who and what kind of, scale that you're going to be at. A lot of these voice actors that work inside of the simuldub industry, they want it to be just union contracts, because one of the ways that you become a SAG-AFTRA union member is by doing these contracts so that you can become a part of it. So in order to do that, you either have to earn points by doing either non-union or union adjacent work, or do union work, which will get you more points faster so that you can join the union. A lot of people, don't really know the ins and outs of the unions of the actors worlds. They're kind of weird, and they have different rules than a lot of other unions that are out there. But I can say from, like, if you're living in Memphis, you probably don't want to be part of a union. But if you're living in a large city, you do want to be part of a union, because then you can get these contracts easier and also have your shit protected when you're part of a contract. Because I cannot tell you the amount of times I've heard horror stories when I was living in Chicago of people that had signed on to contracts or stuff like that, and they had dropped other jobs in order to take this contract that was not a union contract. And then the project or whatever just fucking fell through. And so this person who had a job lined up suddenly had dropped other jobs. They didn't have this job anymore. And so they were scrambling to make ends meet on like what they were going to have to do for the rest of the year. This is like the reason why a lot of actors, even when they are working steadily, will keep like a side gig that they can like ramp up in hours so that they don't just get fucked when this kind of stuff happens. And I see where he's coming from. The other side of this is the people that are online that are like, they're gatekeeping with their union. And it's so people can't do any voice acting projects unless it's a union contract sort of thing. And I'm just like, I'm here to tell you, fan projects aren't going to be touched by union stuff. This is somebody doing a negotiation for the way that a multi-million dollar organization, Crunchyroll, that makes a shit ton of money off of the anime industry. They're like, look, you are a large house and you should be paying with union contracts. Like, you should be doing that. All of your contracts should be like this. It doesn't make any sense why they haven't gotten to this since before. And this union that protects actors and is good for actors that are working actors in the United States, especially, it is one of those things where it's just like, it doesn't make sense by this point that they wouldn't have done it. And it really is a good thing, I think, that there are actors that are big names pushing back on it. Because, like, I, you know, anybody who's done any sort of, like, looking back into what happened with actors and singers and stuff like that inside of the United States, especially before there were unions that were protecting them from shit like this, like, you don't have to go back super far. It's like the 70s, you know, 60s and 70s. Where these people were given like no rights to any of their music or no rights to their likeness or anything like that. When they signed a contract, you basically like signed away everything about yourself until they were done with you. And I'm like, that's why these unions existed. And it's fucked up that they don't already put in protections for them.
Yeah, I would say, you know, not to get like overly political, but I am generally pro-union, and it is my stance and understanding that, generally speaking, a union, whether it's in the entertainment industry or not, exists as a sort of regulatory body. And so you think it is often an anti-union sentiment is often a question of feeling that unions are placing undue, perhaps unfair pressure on job creators to do something that they might do anyway, but that they are now having to do it in a more frustrating, more expensive, whatever way. And that basically they're creating inconvenience for inconvenience's sake. The counter argument, the pro-union argument, is generally that workers are working largely at the mercy of the people that are employing them, and that the people that are employing them have often have all the power in the relationship. They're the ones from where all of the money is coming from that the worker relies on, but they also have access to things like benefits that can affect, you know, your health, your mental health, all that kind of stuff. And as Spencer was saying, things like your likeness, or the work that you're actually producing. And so a lot of the times unions exist not because corporations won't or can't take care of their employees, but because, many of them won't, but because it gives the workers a way to speak up and have a voice in the matter. And once a union is established and union work is established, then there is a sort of like agreement between workers' expectations and their jobs. And when workers have a complaint about their jobs, they have multiple vectors. They can talk to their employer to see if their employer is willing and able to meet whatever increased needs they are experiencing. And if that doesn't work and they feel like it's an unfair situation, then they have another recourse through the union, which has the power to speak as a sort of like gestalt organization for the worker. And obviously it's a complicated system because it's sort of like interwoven throughout all different industries and sort of our cultural fabric. So that's definitely like a simplification, but in general, I'm the kind of guy who thinks that there are more than enough examples of corporations who aren't doing what they should be doing, aren't doing what they said they would do, aren't doing what I would argue is the moral bare minimum. And in the cases of unions, that is generally something that doesn't happen. And when it does happen, the unions can fight for those things in ways that like individual workers just generally don't have the power or the resources to do. And so, you know, even in this article, kind of looking at more information, he specifically outlines that he said that because he has a big voice acting role, he felt that he would have the opportunity to change the fact that Crunchyroll historically does not make most of their stuff under a union contract. And the impression that I get from that is that he's trying to say, I've got weight to throw around. Not every voice actor has weight to throw around. You know, Spencer, I actually recently re-listened to our original interview with Justin Brenner of My Hero Academia fame. And it's a really, really good interview. If you guys haven't listened to it in a while, it's really delightful, and so is he. But it reminded me of the fact that, like, Justin was talking about, like, he had only been voice acting very, very briefly before he was given a couple of bigger roles. And he got a few larger side characters or even leading characters leading up to him being cast as Deku in My Hero Academia, and how like his rise was sort of meteoric, and all of a sudden he was like one of the big names in anime. And I get the impression that like this guy is sort of looking at those people that are not in that position where they don't have that big name, that big property that they can throw around. And he's like, these people don't have any negotiating power. This may be based off of some conversations that he's had with his coworkers, or even experiences that he's had in the past before he's had a big part. I don't know, you know, but I think it's interesting that he's taking this stand. And I think that even if he's not cast in season 3, we should all be hopeful that whoever replaces him is doing good work and is, you know, give them a chance to shine as well. But I also think it's really interesting that he's taking this stand. And I definitely think that, you know, it's probably for the best overall. It does make things a little more complicated if you are not already in a union and you are applying for a union job in the entertainment industry. That can be complicated because there's a certain methodology in which you have to participate in union things before you can be a member of the union. But if you're not a member of a union, there are some parts that are not going to be open to you in union contracts. So there's totally valid criticism here, but I think this is really interesting overall.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have something else to talk about, Blake. Holy shit. Let's talk about Cyberpunk Edgerunner.
Yeah, this is the new Netflix anime. I think it came out just about a week ago. It is I believe a prequel series to the video game Cyberpunk 2077. It is much more mature than I expected. And by that, yes. I mean much more violent, much more gory, and also a little bit of on-screen explicit sexual content that I was not expecting. Mm-hmm. So not a great watch on your lunch break at work. But is it a great watch in general? Spencer, what do you think?
I think it was fucking awesome. Mostly because one of the things that I was not expecting from the show is like this complete turn that happens a couple of times. Like the plot twists inside of the show are fantastic. And also like the world that they have created, this cyber dystopia that's being controlled by like a megalomaniac organization is like very fascinating and very interesting to me. And also, man, like everybody who has watched, I don't know if you watch Mr. Robot yet, but
I've seen mostly through season 2, I believe. So I've seen quite a bit of it.
So like Cyberpunk 2077, God, I couldn't say that. is like the dystopian hellscape that he was exactly worried about in that show. Like, there's one corporation basically that controls everything, it seems like, And like, if you're not a part of them, you're just going to be fucked. And now your body belongs to them as well. And everything inside of your home has like a price that you have to pay in order to use it. It's just like, it's so fucked up.
Yeah, this is, so this centers on a young high school student who I would say 14 years old, 15, somewhere around there, I believe.
He is mildly
delinquent. It seems like he's just involved in some like underground tech stuff. I don't know how illegal it is. It's just sort of like frowned upon for sure. He causes a bit of a kerfuffle at his school. And then he and his mother are victims of a completely random act of violence. Because one of the things is that this city is overrun with crime. And because of this act of violence, they are injured. And because of the society in which they live, where everything is
nickel-dimed,
it was so viscerally frustrating and infuriating to me in a way that I rarely recall an anime like causing me to feel, because it's so real and it's so believable. Because he's like, they get into this accident and he's like,
oh my God,
strapped into a car that is up. This is obviously spoilers for episode one. And we watched the first you watched three as well, right?
Yeah.
It was hard to put down. I really wanted to just keep watching it, but
yes, it is really, really, it's really well animated too. And the colors are fucking great. Yeah, it's
Studio
great.
Trigger. I mean, and it looks like it. So oh my great. God.
Blake.
Also the intro is Franz Ferdinand's This Fire. That's oh my so
God.
Dope.
Yes. Oh my fucking God. This show is great, by the way. I know Blake was about to talk about this, but I swear to God, man, that moment where like they're both dying basically and having to go to the hospital and the people show up and they're just like, well, she's a meat bag. She's not part of the plan. Let's pick up the paramedics subscribers show and leave up. Her.
Yeah, the paramedics show up, scan her, say, oh, she's not on our insurance plan, and then they just fucking leave.
They call her a meat bag.
It is nightmarish, and it is so believable, because currently in America, we live in a society where you can get into an accident, get picked up by an ambulance, and taken to a hospital, and later find out that your ambulance ride wasn't covered by the insurance that you have, and so you're on the hook for it, which is not a cheap experience. And you might get taken to a hospital that's out of network, which is also going to cause headaches where your insurance isn't being accepted because it was the closest hospital, because your accident didn't care about the proximity of your in-network hospital. And this is just like two steps away from that.
Oh my God.
It is so real. And then like he's on his own, and there is like a sequence in which, like, at the beginning of the show, he's trying to do his laundry and it doesn't work because they didn't put enough money in to finish the laundry cycle, which actually sets off this show subtly illustrates this reality of our world, which is that poverty has a snowball effect. And so like they are too poor for him to finish his laundry because his mom didn't preload it with enough because money is tight, and she's trying to hold on to the money as long as she can so that she can assign it to the thing of most pressing need. So he is in the middle of his laundry when the machine shuts off and won't complete the drying cycle because they don't have enough money for the laundry machine in their apartment to finish doing the laundry.
Yes.
And then he doesn't have his school uniform the next day because both his school uniform and his backup school uniform were in there. And now they're soaking wet, so he can't wear them to school. And so he gets in trouble. And the school bully starts picking on him because he got in trouble and because the school bully thinks that it makes them all look bad. And so then they get into a fight, which leads to him making a bad decision about some violence and getting himself into further trouble. And it is just this like spiral. And also while all this is happening, like he finds out that his mother wasn't paying all their rent because again, things were tight and they were tighter than she was letting on because he's a child and she was doing what she could. She was also working as a nurse. So that's also pretty accurate to our current.
No.
Nurses and paramedics are not paid enough.
Blake, it's worse because the people that came and didn't take her were the people that she worked for, Blake.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because
that's
she true. Wasn't a policy holder, though.
And I realized that in the moment, but then when they said that she doesn't have a policy, we're going to leave her, I was blinded by fury and forgot it all. You're right. Yeah,
it's, oh my God.
And so, like, at some point, he shows up to his apartment, and there's, like, an automated screen over the front door that's, like, entry is restricted because rent is overdue. And I'm just like, this is just the digital version of a lockout, but it is the sort of like remote automated digital version that is about like nickel and diming you at every second rather than the, you know, still dubious process of like eviction notices on your door and stuff like that. And it's just so viscerally upsetting because it is so close to the world that we live in. And it's such it's such a clever future adaptation. It also reminded me a little bit of a very fast-paced, action-oriented kind of Blade Runner-esque setting, where that Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049 also had very similar takes on sort of like the dystopic society of the future being ruled by corporations and being bathed in advertisements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then like episode 2 is like a heist training story. And then episode 3 is a heist. And it's just like, this show it's delightful. It's very frustrating.
Also, we haven't talked about the most
good.
Yeah. We also haven't talked about one of the most insane things inside of the show, which is that everybody in the world is basically, you know how in My Hero Academia, it's so cool because everybody has quirks. Well, everybody in this world has basically started to cybernize, like add cybernetics to their body.
And yeah, they're so, doing like, that they're, Mega Man thing.
Well, they're like actively changing their physiology. Like it's really
it's very Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. It's just good. Anyway,
it's good.
We Watch can't recommend it enough. So,
and I haven't played the video game. I think we talked about the video game last week, so I'm not going to get into it. But I can't vouch for how much it is like the video game or what aspects of the video game it's setting up. I already wanted to play the video game because I thought the previews were cool. And, you know, now that I've learned that all the many, many bugs that people hated on have been largely dealt with, I'm like, oh yeah, I hope I get to play this game. But also, if this game feels like parts of this show, it's going to be so fucking good. And I'd be curious to hear what people who have experience with the game think about how the show relates to it as well. But the show is awesome by itself. You don't need to know the game. It's so good. Check it out.
Yeah.
And also, don't check it out in front of people like children or coworkers.
Yeah, because they'll be like, oh, there's so much sexual stuff in this.
Yeah. Just people jerking off in the background of certain transitional scenes and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. You know, having like semi-sexual intercourse and stuff.
Like cybersexual.
Yeah, like
the waifu, you know, is real.
They're going to go on the moon and do it.
Oh, yeah. Moon sex.
Okay, anyways, let's talk about our actual Yu Yu Hakusho episodes. Blake, what happened previously on Yu Yu Hakusho?
Well, Yu Yu Hakusho is a story about a kid named Yusuke Urameshi, who was sort of a school delinquent, probably around 14 or 15, you know, shonen protagonist age. He was sort of a jackass, and everybody thought he was a bad boy. And then a young kid was running out into the street to get his ball, and he was going to get run over by a truck, and Yusuke saved him, got run over by the truck instead. And the afterlife was like, well, we didn't expect that, and now we don't know what to do. And so they give him an opportunity to come back to life. He succeeds, and upon doing so, he finds out that he has the ability to see spirits and stuff like that. And the afterlife is like, that's great, because we're going to put you to work. And they make him the spirit detective, and he starts solving supernatural mysteries for the afterlife and developing supernatural powers that are basically energy blasts from his fingers, which is very cool and shonen, and we like it. He makes a couple of friends. One is Hiei, who is your Vegeta-esque, used to be a villain and is now a sort of like reluctant ally who constantly talks about how he wants to take the main character down, but otherwise generally works as an ally in the same way that the other allies do. He's cool. He's got demon-y fire powers and a special eye. They also meet Kurama, who is a half-demon that's much chiller than Hiei, and Kuwabara, who is one of Yusuke's classmates. They are sort of frenemies, but their friendship is so close that they're actually secretly best friends and they just can't admit it. The four of them become a sort of like shonen action squad and take care of a couple of things. In their most recent brush up, a very powerful enemy brought out a side of Yusuke that nobody knew was there. It turns out that he is many links in the genetic chain back in his history. There was a very powerful demon, and this demon's essence, I guess, has been sort of sleeper selling its way through the generations until Yusuke came along and was like, this is the guy. And so Yusuke's body was taken over by a demonic presence during his fight with Sensui at the end of the last arc. And this led to Yusuke delivering a fatal blow to Sensui. Yusuke is pissed for two reasons. One, he's mad that his body was taken over without his expectations or consent. That's understandable. Two, he's mad that Sensui was killed. This is less understandable because Sensui was a psychotic murderer trying to destroy the world, and Yusuke was willing to totally lose in his fight against him as long as he got to have that fight. And this is very shonen of Yusuke, but is maybe not completely accurate reading of the situation as a whole. Anyway, that's in the past. Yusuke has now been approached by three emissaries from the demon realm who are like, we work for your dad. His name is Ryzen. He is one of three demon kings that live in a state of sort of like mutually assured destruction that led to peace. Essentially, there are three demon kings. They have, you know, many people underneath them. They are approximately the same power. And because they are about the same power, neither one of them can attack any of the others, because then the third one would be able to defeat whichever of the other two survived, because that one would be weakened. And so they're in this sort of like stalemate situation, except that Yusuke's dad, Ryzen, is dying because he stopped eating people, because demons eat people to live. But Ryzen decided not to, for reasons that we really haven't covered yet. And so he's starting to waste away, and he's getting close to dying, and he wants to reach out to Yusuke because Yusuke's demon-ness has awakened now. And it is not clear to me, Spencer, and maybe you can clear this up for me once we get into the episodes, whether or not Yusuke was possessed by his own demon traits, by the lingering essence of the demonic relative from many links down the chain, or by this guy specifically. And it may be that number two and number three are also the same thing. But anyway, Ryzen is dying. He has sent his emissaries to tell Yusuke that he should come to the demon world to basically embrace his demon heritage and prepare to take over the kingdom once Ryzen dies. Yusuke, not for exactly those reasons, begins to prepare to go to the demon world. And we also found out that Hiei and Kurama have both been approached by they've each been approached by the other two demon lords individually to come visit the demon world for their own reasons as well. So the three of them are, unbeknownst to each other, preparing to set off on a demon world excursion, and Kuwabara is just trying to get into prep school, and that brings us to episode 98.
All right. Episode 98, the episode where we finally find out what it takes to return to demon world. In this episode, Return to Demon World. Oh, man. First of all, we're going to find out that Kuwabara wants to be a smart boy, and in order to get him to do that, he has to stop getting distracted, because Kuwabara, like, he's either a big procrastinator, aka Blake Doris, or he is just somebody that has, like, pretty intense ADHD or ADD, one of them.
I also think he's a good student. He's studying his ass off. Is he bad at this, or is he just, does he not retain information well? Or is he a bad test taker, but he gets it. He just gets stressed out at tests. Like, he's trying so hard.
Yeah. Also, he's like, look, a cat.
Well, yeah, he does do that.
I want to spend all my time with this cat. Please let there be a cat in here. And it turns out it's Botan, who's just like, hey, we need to fuck off to the spirit realm real quick because Yusuke is about to leave. And he's like, okay, I'll go with you, especially if it's important. And his sister's like, Botan, what the fuck?
And Botan's like, sorry. But yeah, his sister, so Kuwabara is like studying his ass off and he's doing math. And then his sister busts in and is like, "Are you studying?" And he's like, "Yes, I'm literally doing it right now. I've been doing it all day." And she's like, "Well, I want you to read this book." And he's like, "I'm doing math." And she's like, "Read the book." And so he's,
if you read the book, you get to eat this weird looking hot dog.
Yeah. You get to eat what appears to be a lettuce sandwich. And so
I love that cool bar is just like, "Oh my God, that looks so good."
Uh-huh. And I'm like, he's studying so hard. And it is one thing to be like, "You've done enough math for the day. Let's try reading." It's another to be like, "I don't know if you've been studying, but do something else by reading a book cover to cover by the morning." It's already nighttime. So he's got like, I don't know, instead of sleeping, he has to stay up and read a book. And from the title given, it doesn't sound like it's going to be a particular page turner, but he's like, "Fine, I'll read the book. Because you brought me food, and if anyone knows anything about Kuwabara, it's that the way to his heart is through his stomach." And then Botan shows up pretending to be a kitty, and she's like, "Let's go. We got to go to Genkai's. I don't know why she wants you there, but let's do it." And Kuwabara's like, "I have to get into prep school. I don't know that I have time for this." And she's like, "The girl that you like is going to be there." And Kuwabara's like, "Let me get my things, because if anybody knows anything about Kuwabara, it's that the way to his heart is through a cute girl." And I'm like, it's been 2 minutes, Kuwabara, and we're just all over the place.
Okay, so at Genghai's place, we are going to find out that now everybody knows that he is part demon, and he's going to go back to demon world. Genghai is just like, "You're going to have to do this, I guess." Kuwabara is just like, "I'm going to punch you in the face so you know how much I love you."
He doesn't want Yusuke to go, but you can tell that it's just because of their bromance.
Yeah, and then we find out...
"I don't want my friend to be gone."
Yeah. They also reveal that Hiei and Kurama are going to be there for different reasons.
Yeah, they show up probably to see Yusuke off. But nominally, they just appear out of the shadows to be like, "And I too am going to Demon World, but not right now."
Yeah. I also love that, like, when they decide to send them back to, or send Yusuke back to Demon World, one of the things that they do is, like, it's like the dumb spirit Ginyu Force show up, and they're just like, "We're gonna send you back because we're told that we have to do that." And he's just like, "Yeah,
Big
that's
Daddy
just because you don't."
Life was like, "Yeah, get him out of here."
Yeah, they're like, "It's because you don't want to deal with me," and they're just like, "Yeah, it's because we don't want to deal with you." And I was like, "Don't give away the game, you dummies."
Yeah, but he is Koenma is going to explain this to his stupid ogre companion at one point. That's basically like, ogre is like, "There's no fucking way that King Enma would let Yusuke go to the demon world. He's a powerful demon. He put a hit on Yusuke's head. Why would he let him do this knowingly? Much more, why would he send his own underlings to make it happen?" And essentially what Yusuke made his case, and by that I mean I think Koenma made his case on Yusuke's behalf, that King Enma should let Yusuke go to the demon world because maybe he won't be able to come back, and then it won't be their problem anymore. And we find out that King Enma is not only like, "That's a great idea," but that Kurama and Hiei each individually and of their own accords, without conferring with any of the other three, also made the exact same case, and King Enma has like stamped their passports for all three of them. Like, "Yep, get them out of here. They're really powerful. They're demons. Let's not have them in the real world." And it's like, I see the logic, but also I kind of see Ogre's logic, where when he hears that story, he's like, "Ugh, this is the guy that's in charge."
I love that King Enma's really of the logic of just build a wall and put them on the other side of the wall.
Make it so someone else's problem, and maybe it won't be ours again, and who knows?
Yeah. Okay. Then we get probably my favorite moment from these episodes, which is just Yusuke's going to arrive in Demon World, and the bald guys are going to run up super fast, and then they're going to be like, "Follow me, we're gonna run fast." And then we're just like, and then he's like, "Oh God, we've been running for so long. How long is it gonna be?" And they were like, "We gotta run for like 5 days." And he's like, "5 days?
Uh-huh." Then
is that a better way to fucking travel?
Then they go, "Let's run faster."
And they do. And then you get like a cute little montage thing that was definitely cheap for the animators. And then they get to where they're going, and the bald boys are sweaty and panting, and Yusuke is normal. And they're like, we ran, and then we ran faster, and we were fools because you're not even sweaty. And Yusuke's like, you should know by now that I don't turn down a challenge. And I'm like, this is stupid. Like, I like it, but it's dumb.
Yeah, it's definitely dumb.
He does say something to them where he's like, you should put some of the muscles from your legs into your brain or something like that. It's not that exactly, but it's some stupid thing where it's like, some of the energy you used to run should be used on thinking, you dumb fuck.
Okay, and then he gets to meet his grumbly bellied great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. Yes!
Because they're like, what is that? He's like, what's that rumbling noise? And they're like, oh, that's how hungry the king is. It makes a terrible rumble across the land, and we use it to keep time.
I'm like, can somebody get this motherfucker a sandwich?
Give him the lettuce sandwich that Kuwabara got for not doing math anymore.
Yeah, like, his only hunger is for humans, but like, come on, you could eat something else. Like...
Can we do like a you know, ethical euthanasia program when we send our, like, I've got cancer and I don't want to go through chemo and I'm, you know, I'm good. Like, let's just let me pass into the West. Let's do that. And they're like, okay, but you're going to have to get eaten for a demon. And you're like, I don't know. I still don't want to do chemo. Let's do it. You know, let's do that program.
Okay. So then Yusuke's just like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to try to punch you and shoot you with a spirit blast as hard as I can. And his great grand demon daddy is just like, nope, that's not going to work on me. You're not strong enough. You need to learn how to use your powers, because otherwise you're not going to be able to stand up to the mantle that you need to stand up for. And he's just like, fine.
Fine, I'll work with you, but I hate you. They also, like, he immediately starts fighting Ryzen and trying to kill him, and then it, like, cuts to the outside where the bald boys are standing, and they're like, nah, sounds like a demon meeting his dad. I'm like, you guys are weird. This is a weird dynamic. I mean, there are no therapists in demon world. Nobody can work anything out productively.
Yeah. All right, and that cuts to our next episode, episode 99, Haunted by the Past. This episode and next episode are all about how he really mistreated as a child.
Yeah, like, but also like was how aware, mistreated, like perfectly aware of things like in the womb.
Oh yeah, he was definitely like,
enough with that.
Demon baby logic doesn't make any sense to me.
And you see like baby Hiei's. Baby Hiei is swaddled and you just see one eye and it just looks like regular Hiei eye, but little.
Yeah. Also, like, I'm intimately aware of, like, how babies are. I have two of them. And
you sure
not
do.
That aware. They're not nearly as aware as you think they are.
The only thing they're aware of is when the other one is getting more attention than them.
Yeah. And not always even then. Anyways, okay, let's talk real quick about the things that are going on inside of this episode. First of all, they apparently where Hiei comes from, the ice apparitions are only they get pregnant by immaculate conception.
I think it's probably more spontaneous generation, but they do use a word that sort of.
They basically just say immaculate conception.
Yeah, but the way they talk about it, it sounds like so they live in an all-female society, and once every 1,000 years, a woman will get pregnant and give birth to a female child. The only way you can have a male child is if you go fuck someone. And Hiei's mom did. And yeah, then she had twins. She had a regular, normal ice lady baby, and then she had Hiei, who's also a fire boy, which I didn't realize was intrinsic to him as of birth, but yeah, apparently it is.
Yeah, so that's apparently who Hiei is, fire boy.
And they're like, we don't want fire boys in our ice lady land, so we're going to throw him off a cliff, but we're going to make your best friend do it in front of you.
Yeah. Oh my god, man. They're just so awful. Like, this society that he's from is just like, they're just like, they're mean ice girls is what they are. They're just like,
you can't sit with us. Like
that? Man, let's throw your baby off the cliff.
But we're going to make your best friend do it in front of you.
Oh my god, so I didn't even understand anything you just said.
They're just like, here, take this hot baby away from you. We're going to give it to your best friend. She's going to chuck it from the cliff. Nah! He's like, I could remember everything from when I was in the womb, and I remembered what they said, and I remember the bitch that threw me over, and I was gonna kill her. And then he, like, so this is like, some of this will go into episode 100, because these are basically like a 2-episode arc. And so he gets found by some Mad Max bandits, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna steal this Mad jewel Max from bandit. This baby. And then he bites their finger, and they're like, this guy's cool.
They're like, anybody that bites my finger can hang out.
Yeah, we thought he was just a baby we could steal from, but he seems like he's hardcore.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the other thing. We are also going to find out that there is this demon surgeon, and the demon surgeon is going to give Hiei this eye called the Jagan Eye. We have learned about this before. It's a very, very powerful demonic eye that has to be surgically implanted inside of your head. And it also, it really fucks with you when it is first put in. And so apparently a lot of people, you either survive or you don't. He survived it. And then this guy is apparently, he is working or is able to be coaxed in by the demon lord that is the person that brought Hiei there in the first place. And, he is
Mukuro, right?
Mukuro. And well, I mean, I say he, but we'll find out. So Mukuro is like, you've been good about killing all of these demons that I had put in front of you. How are you going to do about killing this other demon?
By the way, Mukuro is talking to the like second in command, who I think is the surgeon guy. But in that scene, they're both wrapped up in bandages, so you can't really tell. But I think the second in command is the surgeon guy.
I don't think so, but.
Oh, okay. Well, the surgeon guy, the second in command wasn't there in this scene, and Shigure is about the same size. So that's why I jumped to that conclusion. So that might be completely spurious of me. But yeah, Mukuro is like, I told you to put him in there with 500 A-class demons, which is very strong demons, so that he could fight his way through them to be strong. And the guy's like, I did that. And Makuro's like, you've been my right-hand man for so long. You should know when I say 500, I mean 1,000. And I was like, no, thank you. I don't want to live in this environment. This is why we have unions.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's talk about this fight that's going to come up, though. Because in order to, like, advance further, he has to fight this demon surgeon, the one that gave him the Jagan Eye. And he is just like, okay, well, if I got to do this, I'll do it. And it's fine because this guy sort of sucks. And I was like, but why does he suck? I don't, like, what did he actually do to you? I don't know if he actually did anything other than give you the thing that you asked for.
Yeah. The Jagan Eye surgery was painful and caused him a long road of recovery. Now, of course, he did appear to ask for it specifically and was not summoned or told about it externally. He did that of his own will. And the guy, even the Shigure, was like, I don't know, man, it's going to suck. And he was like, do it. So, like, I don't know that this grudge is fair. And then, like, Shigure, he was like, I taught you how to swing a sword while you're recovering. And so, like, I don't know, maybe Hiei is a good fighter because Shigure helped him learn to become one while he was recovering, and it really seems like this guy was just a mentor that Hiei hates for no reason.
Yeah, it really does seem like that, doesn't it?
They are, though, in like classic samurai film shown in anime tradition, totally fine with having a fight to the death. And Shigure has a hilarious weapon that I love so much, which is a hula hoop blade. He holds a hula hoop around him, except that it's just a sword. It's like a curved sword, but it goes all the way around like a hula hoop, and he's going to slice you up. And then he's got his own sword out. And they do this really actually like totally sweet sequence where like they do the run at each other and then they run past each other and it's so fast you don't see what happens. And then it cuts to a shot of Shigure's face from the nose down. And he's like, ah, an honorable death. And then it cuts down and you see that the top of his head is on the floor.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm not trying to laugh right now because it's not goofy. It's pretty cool. I liked it. I mean, some people it's going to be goofy, but I liked it. I thought it was cool. I was like, ah, that's sweet. And then what I really liked was that they then went back and showed in slow motion what happened when they clashed. And so you see like this series of blows that are all really cool. And
he like fucking sacrificing his arm and his fucking innards. Like he gets stabbed his arm very off. Badly.
Yeah, he is fatally wounded. And that's one of the things is that the teacher Shigure is like, it's an honorable death because we both died. Like neither of us had to kill the other one. We both died. And then, which is ironic because Makuro is like, you have won. I will heal you.
Yeah.
We also find out that Hiei in the past went back to his old village to kill them as he had vowed to do when he was a baby being tossed from a cliff. And then he gets there and he's like, these people, their lives suck so bad that I'm not even going to kill them because they're basically already dead. So I'm just going to leave them there. But he does talk to the woman who threw him off the cliff. And she's like, oh, your mom is dead. She killed herself because we threw her baby off of a cliff in front of her. Who could have seen this coming? And he also flashes back to being given a jewel by his sister because his sister doesn't know that he's her brother. She was kidnapped because her like species, these ice people, when they cry, their tears turn into valuable jewels. And usually they only cry one single tear when they have a baby. And then that baby, they put the tear jewel on a chain and the baby wears the chain. Hiei's mom cried two tears so that each of the babies got one. Hiei had his for a while and then he lost it when he was fighting somebody. He got knocked off of his neck and he killed the guy in a like pretty gruesome stabbing. And then he was like, I lost my fucking necklace and I didn't realize until this moment that I actually cared about it. Now I feel like a dummy. And then he goes on his quest and finishes it up, finding out that the village isn't worth his time. And then he like goes through all this and he goes through this fight with Shigure and he's in a Dragon Ball Z rejuvenation tank. And Makuro is like, first of all, I have your fucking jewel. It's in my mouth and you can have it back. And then Makuro is like, I'm going to take off my bandages and I'm going to show you who I really am. And here's what I thought. I thought it was going to be the woman that threw him off the cliff. Second place, I thought it was going to be his mom. What I did not expect was it was just going to be some random lady with a weird eye.
Not with a weird eye, with one side of her body completely fucked. Like,
is that what really... it was? I only noticed the eye.
Yeah, it's her entire, like, the entire side of her body is just, like, brutally, brutally half destroyed and burned. And so...
Well, I
like,
whooshed on that one.
Yeah. So, she has this moment of, like, you're in a tank. And I was just like, oh, man, you're kind of gross.
Chill out. Ugh.
Yeah. But anyways, those are our episodes we watched this week. It's getting weird in Yu Yu Hakusho, you guys.
I still like it. I think all of these episodes have been good so far. But I agree with you that the number of episodes remaining just doesn't feel like enough, especially since the next episode preview seems to imply that we're going to be doing the same thing next time, but with Kurama's backstory. So I don't know. I don't know. But yeah. I like what we're doing so far.
So get prepared for that and stick with us after these credits, and we'll give you what's coming on next week.
Blake and Spencer Get Jumped is made by Forever Summer Productions and presented as part of the Geekly Grind podcast network.
Sound editing is done by Rashad English. He's our level 15 sound wizard. Fireball! Ad-free versions of our podcast are available on Patreon, along with extra Patreon-only goodies, like additional conversations and articles written by the hosts.
Follow us on Twitter at @BandsGetJumped.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/BlakeAndSpencerGetJumped.
Or talk to us on Reddit at reddit.com/r/getjumped.
We also have a Discord server, and you can find links to that on our social media platforms.
If you like the show, please like, subscribe, and leave a review. Reviews help other listeners find our show.
New episodes come out every week.
Thanks for listening.
Hello, my name is Jeremy Snow, and I'm the founder and editor-in-chief of The Geekly Grind, a geek-centric website that covers all manners of topics from video games and anime to tabletop games, board games, comics, and more. If you're looking for a website to add to your daily rotation for some of the latest news, reviews, and overall takes on where geek culture is headed, make sure to bookmark thegeeklygrind.com and pay us a visit. I also wanted to thank you for being a faithful listener to this podcast. Blake and Spencer Get Jumped is a vital member of our podcast family, which also includes Knights of the World Table, which is a D&D audio drama podcast, The Ink and Paint Club, an animation podcast, Comic Book Keepers, which is a comic book podcast, and Geeksploration, the podcast, which is on general geek culture. We also have the Geekly Grind podcast, which provides audio renditions of our published articles, special guests, and more. Make sure to seek those out and listen to them wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again.
Next time on Blake and Spencer Get Jumped, we're watching Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, episodes 52 through 54.
Is it the promised day yet, Blake? It's like waiting for Christmas, this promised day. And I'm assuming that when it gets here, everybody's getting toys.